Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on May 26th, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Hi there, I'm Adam Walker. I'm the director of publicity here at Film Forum, and I would like to thank all of you for coming out tonight for the world theatrical premiere of Unlocking the Cage. We are thrilled to be opening this masterful documentary about a fascinating issue that has revolutionary potential. We are honored to have with us tonight the great Chris Hegedus and D.A. Pennybaker. Who have, to cite A.O. Scott's review in today's New York Times, quote, together and separately made some of the most memorable documentaries of the past half century, end quote. Give it up. These documentaries include The War Room, Startup.com, Don't Look Back, and Kings of Pastry, all of which we have proudly played here at Film Forum. Hegedus and Pennybaker will join us after the screening for a Q&A, along with Stephen Wise, the brilliant animal protection attorney and president of the Non-Human Rights Project. Whose story you are about to see. Please be sure and stay with us for what I know will be a really engaging discussion. And now, please help me welcome Chris Hegedus for a few words of introduction.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. This is extremely exciting for us to premiere the film at Film Forum, which is kind of a home for us and so many of our films. There's a lot of people to thank on this film, and I'm sure I'm going to forget a lot of them. But first, I'd like to thank our team. And Pennybaker is saving his knees, so he's going to get up later, and he's here in the audience, as well as as well as Fraser Pennybaker, who allows us to do our films, really. So thank you, Fraser. Rosadel Varela, who actually came to us and told us about Steve and what he was going to do and introduced him to us and brought him to our office. And, you know, the rest is what you're going to see there. And there's, you know, our fellow protagonists from our film, Steve Wise. I don't know if he's here right now. He'll be here after if he's not. But I know Elizabeth Stein, Liddy Stein is here. These are my girlfriends. And Natalie Prosen is here, too, so it's really great. So anyway, I just, you know, want to say that it was a real privilege to kind of drop in on their world and have this adventure with them. So I hope you enjoy it, and we'll be there afterwards. Thank you.
Please help me welcome D.A. Pennybaker, Chris Hegedus, and Stephen Wise.
To welcome Stephen Wise.
So we'll take some questions from the audience in a minute. I'll just kick things off a bit. I wanted to hear from Chris and Penny. Just you mentioned a little bit about the genesis of the project, but I wonder if you could sort of expand on how it came to you and how you sort of got involved and decided to pursue this project.
Just before I start, I just wanted to thank a couple more people.
Oh, sure, of course.
I wanted to thank Brad Goldberg from the Animal Welfare Trust, who's here, being a supporter, as well as Veg Fund, which has come in and helped us during this process of releasing the film. So, okay, how we began the process?
Yeah.
Is that the question? Yeah. You know, like most of our films, you know, somebody walks in our door and, you know, asks us if we'd like to do a film about something. And in that case, it was Rosadel, who's here. And, you know, it was just really a fateful moment because we were in between projects and we were kind of mourning our dog, actually, because we had this huge St. Bernard Akita dog that we loved and had died. And it just seemed very fateful that in came this project about animals. It was almost like, you know, he told us, you know, it's coming. And, you know, Steve came and told us, you know, what he was about to do. And it, you know, it sounded fascinating. I mean, we knew very little really about animal rights or anything about the law. And Penny always says nothing about the law except, you know, when we went into court and paid parking tickets. But, you know, he was just starting. He was at the beginning, and that's really where we want to be when we make a film.
And, Steve, I would be interested to hear sort of your experience as a subject of a Penny Baker Hedges documentary.
We treated him very well.
Oh, before I did that, I'd like to acknowledge Elizabeth Stein, who is here.
Yes,
stand up.
Stand up, Liddy.
Liddy.
Natalie Prosen is here.
Hey, Natalie.
I'm afraid the more minor characters will have to remain seated.
Sorry, Charles.
It would take a long time. The minor characters are here. It was an extraordinary thing, so much so that when it was over, I realized that that I wasn't sure if anything I did would anymore because Penny and Chris weren't filming me. So it really was a quite an experience, and it was something that we were really grateful to them for doing because we felt that that the film would be made very well, which of course we were very right, and that it would help introduce, you know, millions of people to what we do throughout the world, which also is going to happen, has already begun.
Well, any questions from the audience?
Thank you so much for the great work and the great film. I know everybody in here cares about chimpanzees. 66 chimpanzees are currently being starved to death by the New York City Blood Center. Find out more about that from myself and some other people here afterwards. My question for you, Stephen, is, isn't the question not whether they can vote, not whether or not they have a high IQ or are even smart, but can they suffer? That is, doesn't the legal rights adhere to the millions of chickens and the millions of fish that die every day, as well as to the so-called intelligent species?
Well, I think the answer to that is rights don't adhere to any non-human animals whatsoever. And if you'd like to, if you haven't seen enough of me, you may have seen that I was in the middle of a TED Talk up there, and I give a 14-minute TED Talk. Go to TED.com, put in my name, and you'll get a more full explanation of why we choose chimpanzees. But in very short, no non-human animals are legal persons. They've been legal things who lack the capacity for rights as long as there have been rights. And there's a wall that exists between these legal things and legal persons. One time, many human beings were also legal things. Now, all of them are legal persons. But it's a dynamic process. And so the immediate work of the Non-Human Rights Project is to break a hole through that wall and begin bringing some non-human animals over from being legal things to being legal persons. And the best plaintiffs, for many reasons, we think, are such autonomous animals as chimpanzees, other apes and elephants, and orcas, maybe others as well. And
stop eating them, we can do a whole lot, right?
You don't need a lawsuit to stop eating them.
Just right there. Wait, sorry, right here.
I don't need a microphone.
No, just wait for the microphone, please.
Okay. Thank you. Let me see if I can get this straight. So we're talking about personhood. So inanimate objects like a corporation, any kind of thing, is the reason that they're granted the personhood because somebody's speaking for them, like the head of that corporation or somebody that's like us that's speaking for the river, the ocean, or whatever. I really think, yeah, I see it here, it's coming, but the mainstream, the regular people, you know, we're always visioning ahead. They're not caught up to us. It's going to take a while, but I really think if you keep on doing what you're doing and we keep on saying what we're saying, it's going to happen. It's going to break through. Maybe not in my lifetime. I don't have kids, but I know I'm going to plant the seeds. It's just a matter of time. And as to what he says, I know everybody always brings up about the farm animals or whatever. We all have choices to make. You know, nobody's saying, but I don't want that to stop because every time when I go to these conferences and they speak up for the dogs and the cats, well, what about the farm animals? We know about that. But I don't want those to be taken away because it stops what we're doing here. You know, that stuff is still going on. You all have a choice whether you want to eat it, whether you want to wear it. We just have to bring it out in the yard and let those people not use that as a reason and stop what we're saying and doing, but do some, you know, do let them do their thing to represent. And I just thank you very much for this. I thought it was just wonderful. Thank you very much.
If I may.
And thank you to Charles Siebert. Thank God for the New York Times, because I don't care what anybody says, who they're voting for, but I believe in the New York Times, and when you reach the caliber of the New York Times, well, that's better than maybe the Daily News and the New York Post. Thank
if,
you very much.
If I may say, I disagree in that this breakthrough will happen in your lifetime. I don't have any doubt of that. And I agree with you, and I do thank God for the New York Times and Charlie Siebert. Yeah. I'll throw in A.O. Scott after today's review as well.
And
that was so wonderful. Steve, I know I've known what you've been doing for a while, and I've always thought there's going to be a dramatic movie about him, you know, 100 years from now, and it's going to have warm light, and he's going to be in a courtroom. And it's going to be very beautiful and dramatic. And there was some warm light. It was definitely a courtroom, but it was a documentary. It wasn't what I expected, but it's so powerful. I'm so glad it's out now because, you know, now is when we can make change happen. So my question is, you know, I've seen comparisons of this to Blackfish and so forth, which had a pretty clear call to action. What is the call to action that you consider is the call to action for viewers like us who... you know, we're just everyday people. I saw Sheila Nevin's name. Is it going to be on HBO when I, you know, come home? Do I say, watch it for this on HBO? Do I say, watch for it on Netflix? Like, what can we do?
Come to Film Forum.
Bring your friends. Okay.
And is read there, the Times.
And what's that?
Read the Times.
And read the Times. Okay.
No, it will eventually be on HBO, but right now, come to Film Forum and send your friends to Film Forum, and it will play in other theaters around the United States as well as be broadcast in other countries and play in theaters in Canada and other places. I think I'll let Steve address the call to action because that's more pertinent.
Well, the Non-Human Rights Project has, over the last year, been speaking often with Evan Wolfson, who's one of the brains behind the gay marriage movement, and Evan has been very generous with his time to help us set out a long-term strategic plan as to how we can come anywhere as close to the success with the rights of non-human animals as Evan has and others with gay marriage. And so we are going to continue to focus on litigation, but we're also going to begin to branch out into all of the states if we can, and work in many areas, in education, potentially direct action, although I'm not sure if I'm going to be involved in that or any of the lawyers are, and as well as we are branching out and have been working with legal groups in Argentina, Australia, France, UK, Portugal, Spain. It's really a worldwide movement. And in fact, I was in Argentina 2 weeks ago, and I think it's fair to say that everywhere I went, I was mobbed. And I'm sitting there people taking selfies with me, 8,000 miles away from a New York courtroom, thinking, yeah, how does this happen? And the answer is, I don't know how it happens, but I did see that it happened, day after day after day. And so we're having the world hear us. The world is hearing us, and we are making much more rapid progress than I ever would have thought.
But you can see why we fell behind Steve. He makes you feel that the future is sneaking up on you, and you want to know what the fuck is coming.
As I sometimes say, Penny started not knowing anything about this and has become the most rabid animal rights activist amongst of us all.
It's true. It's true. So I think that in the next generation, within 20 years maybe or so, we'll have all stopped eating meat because it's just too expensive. And it's really not a long-term way of life that's going to work for us. And I think animals, just somehow viewing them instead of subjects for food or work, somehow animals are going to turn out to be, I think all animals, I think all life has a way of talking. We just don't understand it. But they talk to each other. Trees talk to each other. I think that, you think I'm crazy when I say that, but I know they do. And I think that in the future, we're going to form a relationship with animals as fellow inhabitants of the planet who have everything as much to give us as we give them. And I think that that's going to be a different kind of a place. It'll be interesting to see. But I think what I really think is that 25 years from now, Steve will be seen as the George Washington crossing the Delaware of animal rights.
I'm usually loud, so I'm not used to a microphone. Thank you very much just even putting together the documentary, because even though, as you said, you're going mainstream, everyone's heard about this, and it's getting it out there, and it's opening people's eyes. And, I still remember 40 years ago when I ran my first fundraiser in my driveway on roller skates for harp seals, to end that, the clubbing of harp seals. And I still look at the news and think, how is this still happening? But the wave that you started with this case in the courts, it got people who never pay attention to anything animal-related paying attention, because it was lawyers. Lawyers work with the corporate world. They want to know what's going to happen from this. But with this wave of mainstream, I'm sure you've hit walls. What has been your biggest wall you felt you slammed into during this?
Well, as lawyers who are here know, in order to get to the substance of your arguments, there's always a flurry of procedural obstacles that are thrown in front of you, and that has been happening to us, and one by one, we've been getting over them. Justice Jaffe sided with us in a great many ways in her opinion, and she got us over on a large number of obstacles. Perhaps the most important one was what we lawyers would call the issue of standing, the idea that only a person who has been injured can sue a defendant successfully. And so the problem with non-human animals and humans is that the human beings are persons, but they're not the ones being injured. The animals are being injured. And so the animals are being injured, but they're not persons. And so that's always been the catch-22. And one of the many reasons that the Non-Human Rights Project chose to litigate under a writ of habeas corpus was because it's almost the only cause of action, we argued, in which we could claim that we're not being injured, but would allow to sue on behalf of the chimpanzees or the elephants or whoever who were being injured. And the first court to deal with that was Justice Jaffe, and she agreed with us that we did have standing, even though we did not allege we were injured. And so while it's not a huge public issue. You don't see the front page of the New York Times saying standing granted. That, mm-hmm. But lawyers know that if you don't have standing, you don't got nothing. And so so for us, that was a really important advance.
Steve, congratulations. It's so great. And I'm so glad to see that you're starting with elephants now as well, because I know
Indeed.
That's been a couple of years in the making. Pennebakers, thank you so much for a fabulous film. Two things. I just want to say, what can we do? Everybody here should get on social media tomorrow morning and hashtag non-human rights and chimpanzees. And all of us who have organizations that work for animals should do the same for all of our followers on Facebook and Twitter. My question to you is, what's the next step? Where are you going now? Where do we go after that last ruling?
Well, we have several appeals up in the first department in Manhattan. So we just filed a brief in one of them last week. And so we hope to argue that before the year is out. So we're not done with the state of New York under every circumstance. Another one of the many reasons why we chose a writ of habeas corpus was it's an unusual statute in that there's no res judicata, which for lawyers means that once you sue somebody, whether you win or whether you lose, you can't sue again. You only get one shot at it. Habeas corpus doesn't have that rule, so you can just keep suing. So we have now filed six lawsuits on behalf of our four chimpanzees, and we wanted to be able to have that available to us because we knew that we were the first people to be filing these kinds of suits, that it would seem almost certainly strange to judges, and that it was likely that we would make a mistake, or judges would make a mistake, or everybody in the courtroom would make a mistake. And we wanted to be able to see how the judge would rule, sit back, and try to fix the problem for however we lost. And so we indeed did that. We also, one of the things we liked about New York was that it had a venue statute for habeas corpus, which meant we didn't have to file a lawsuit where in the county where the chimpanzees were. We could file a lawsuit anywhere we wanted. So when we filed a lawsuit on behalf of Hercules and Leo on Long Island, and the judges didn't even give us the time of day, we said, okay, now we'll file it in Manhattan and see what happens there. And really good things are happening there. So the suits are going on. We're working on our elephant suits. We're after our elephant experts who are always out in the bush in Canada and don't have computer access. It's slow. But it's happening, and we hope to have our elephant suit filed by next year. We're looking at a third state. We're looking at a fourth state. And we're also beginning working with Evan Wolfson, who I guess I'll see again tomorrow. We're working with him to try to expand outside of litigation in a way that will ultimately support our litigation.
See, the problem, I don't see how this film is going to end.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing.
Steve and I and Chris are going to be going on till we drop.
It's too interesting.
It's somehow I forgot to
important.
Mention to them that it would take 4 or 5 years
That's
of,
true.
Of work before.
This didn't come up in our original talk.
Just right there.
Thank you. It seemed to me, and it might have just been my imagination, but a couple of the scenes, especially the ones with the guy who was teaching the chimpanzee karate, and then at the reindeer place, it seemed like the angle of the camera sort of suggested that the person might not have known they were being videotaped. It was kind of at an up angle. I'm not sure if that's the case. So I kind of have a three-part question. Was there releases gotten for all of that footage? And if so, how did you get them? And was there any footage that you wanted to show but couldn't because you didn't get releases?
Well, just, you know, it was just myself filming, and I went with Charles and Stephen on this journey to find the chimpanzees. I did not get releases. I had the camera visible. I asked, you know, if I could film, and, you know, we talked to our lawyers, and it's in our film.
We never get releases, by the way.
And is that because it's a documentary and you don't need them?
No, we don't like them. I lose them. I if I get them, I put them in my pocket, and then I can't find them when I get back. And Fraser says, "Have you got any releases?" And I say, "No." I thought so.
We do get releases. He's just not in charge of that part.
There you see.
Well, the gentleman knew something was going on because I'm speaking to him. Chris is filming him, and Charlie Siebert's taking notes.
In regards to the issue of standing, hasn't the Animal Legal Defense Fund created a precedent in a case involving a captive bear, I believe, in Pennsylvania, whereby standing was in regards to the plaintiffs were actually, the argument was that the people were being harmed by the bear kept in this abusive condition.
You can get standing, but you must show that the human plaintiff is being injured. And so sometimes you can show by you can claim you're suffering psychological damages or something like that. I've lost a lot of those cases, and it's not easy. And under the Roberts Court and before then the Rehnquist Court, at least at the federal level, it's become harder and harder to get standing. But they are asking ALDF or someone else, PETA. They're claiming that the human beings are injured. We don't claim that. We claim that the chimpanzees are being injured, and we are going into court to vindicate their rights and not ours. And that's the big difference.
Sure. I agree with that tactic. But I think it is interesting because I think many of us can probably relate to feeling emotional duress from seeing animals abused. I certainly have been. So I think it's an interesting angle.
Yes.
And if it's successful, and I think they did get somewhere in that case.
Well, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose on standing. And also, there's standing under federal law, and then each of the 50 states has its own standing requirements. So sometimes you may be able to get standing in one state, and you wouldn't be able to get it in another. But I think for us, one of the important things was to clearly differentiate, our suit from everyone else's suit, in that we're not coming in to vindicate our rights and our injury. We're coming in to vindicate the rights and the injuries of the non-human animal.
We have time for one more question. Just right there.
Hi, it was a great documentary. I just want to ask about Tommy now. Now he's in a different state. You have to file papers in that state now? In Michigan?
Oh, Tommy, we don't actually quite know where Tommy is right. In fact, there was an article today that said, "Where's Tommy?" And that's a question we're asking because in order for us to figure out how we're going to get at Tommy, we have to figure out where Tommy is. And PETA sent someone out to the zoo a couple weeks ago and reported back to us that he was not there. So, we're concerned that means he's dead, that he'd be a fourth chimpanzee who was dead. But we don't know that. I've sent a letter to the zoo asking where he is, and I was immediately answered, not. And then we're also going to Fish and Wildlife at the federal level, USDA at the federal level, Michigan Fish and Wildlife, and we are going to find out where Tommy is. And once we find out where he is, then that will guide what we're going to do.
If you were a chimpanzee, wouldn't it make you feel good to have him on your case?
Thank you all.
Thank you all so much for coming, and thank you for being here. It's a real honor.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.